Carrie Cassidy from Project Camelot. We're going live with Ole Damgaard, and he is the illustrious author of Coup d'etat in Slow Motion, which is an amazing book, really. And I highly respect this amazing work of investigative journalism. And I'm going to let Ole do the honors of introducing himself. But I did want to make people aware that his book is available on his website and also linked on Project Camelot. And if you're watching this broadcast, you will be aware of my website, projectcamelot.org or projectcamelotportal.com or projectcamelot.tv. All those URLs go to this exact same place. And then you can also go to his website. And Ole, welcome. Let me say that first of all.
Thank you so much, Carrie. It's an honor to be with you.
Okay. And at this moment, I'm just going to put you on front and center here so that we can just have to do some quick framing.
I feel framed.
Okay. Yes, you are. You are framed. Okay, so, well, this is great to have you here, and it's going to be fun to delve into the details of your book, as well as, you know, which we did do before. We have had you on my radio show, and we've also had you on a group live broadcast talking about various things, some false flags and assassinations, but we didn't get a chance to really do a one-on-one with you about false flags and assassinations. So this is a good opportunity for us to drill down in that area. Okay?
Yeah.
Okay, great. So, okay, so at this moment, what I'd like you to do is just introduce yourself. And here, I'm actually going to put my picture up here. This is sort of a weird situation where I have to monitor the usage to make sure that it can handle certain aspects of this broadcast. I'm getting a warning light at the moment, not sure why. But let's go ahead anyway, and hopefully everything will be fine. So go ahead and introduce your book, and I can also bring your website up on the screen if that's helpful at all, and we'll see how that goes. All right, go ahead.
Okay, well, like you say, my name is Ole Damgaard. And my body was born in Denmark. I grew up mostly in Sweden, and since then I've been living on Iceland, a while in England, and now I've been living in Spain since 2000. And the reason I'm living in Spain is because I was doing some very intense research into the assassination of the Swedish Prime Minister, Olof Palme. He was shot dead in the street of Stockholm in February 1986, and I think, like maybe many of your listeners know, if you start digging too deep in these type of things, it can get very scary. And I lost two friends that were investigators as well, and I just felt it's getting too close now, so we decided to move, and since then I've been living here in Spain. But like you say, I've been dedicating, it's 3 decades now, to finding out what really happened or what is really going on in the world, because many, if not all, of these big events or assassinations and terror acts are actually connected. This is what I've found through my research, and I've found very, very strong links between the assassinations of JFK, Martin Luther King, Robert Kennedy, Oklahoma City, 9/11, the Swedish Prime Minister, the killing of him, like the murder of Robert Smith in South Africa, Salvador Allende in Chile, Che Guevara in Bolivia, and so on, where it actually is possible possible track it back, all of it, back to the same global power elite who have even used the same assassins. And I've been able to track them down one by one, and also been able to prove how they have been extremely active since the late 1950s all the way up until today.
Excellent. Well, okay. And at this moment, what I'd like to do is sort of start out with a brief analysis of your book, you know, Coup d'etat in slow motion, kind of what you focused on, which was the assassination of how do you say his name?
Olof Palme.
Olof Palme. And yeah. and which was the Swedish prime minister, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. And so this is back in, this is actually now several years ago, right? What year?
It was 1986. So it's many years ago.
Yeah. Yeah. But it was a very momentous occasion, and as we've discussed in other interviews, you kind of made the point that in a certain sense it was when the New World Order got involved, you know, sort of infiltrated Sweden in a big way.
They had already infiltrated Sweden many years before that, and Olof Palme was actually part of the Bilderberg Group and part of the elite as well. He was part of the Committee of 300 and so on. So he was a very double-faced person, I would like to suggest. There was one official place where he was the protector of the weak. And also when it came to different countries, the smaller ones like Nicaragua, Cuba, Palestine and so on. He was the international face of the one who stood up for these smaller countries. But as far as I've been able to find out after 30 years, he was behind the scenes. He was working very intense for the elite themselves, involved in illegal weapons deals and other not very nice things. So the reason why he was taken out, it's very, very complex. I would say it's almost as complex as the JFK assassination. Many, many similarities, and also the same power elite behind it.
Okay.
So, no, I just wanted to say that my interest started long before that. It was in the early 1980s that I really started getting interested in the JFK assassination. That was way beyond, before the JFK movie and so on. And there were, as far as I know, not that many people interested. It was mostly older guys who was really trying to sort out what really happened. But the major public was very much buying the official story. And then I had absolutely no idea until I saw the Zapruder film for the first time. And the Zapruder film is the one where there's a bystander who films the whole motorcade coming in, and where you can see how Kennedy's being hit with several shots, and also where the final headshot is coming straight from the front right, hitting him in the head and then throwing him backwards to the left, showing, you don't have to be very clever to understand that the shooter could not stand where the official story says, which would be behind him up to the right, but instead that the actual shooter of the final shot was positioned front and right. And there we have it. I mean, that just showed right away that the official story was absolutely not true. And so I got very intrigued in trying to find out what actually happened. And it took me on like a 30-year trip that I had absolutely no idea that what I started when I did that, but it's taking me down a road that has been very scary in many ways. It's very dark and sinister, but also I feel now it's giving a lot of hope and so on, because there's so much such an awakening going on at the moment globally among normal people who used to see people like myself as a tinfoil hat case. And now they're sort of really starting to understand themselves that, hey, there's something very weird going on and it's time for us to wake up. It's high time to really start to see what's going on.
Absolutely. Okay. At the moment, you mentioned in the brief sort of description that I put onto my website that you also want to get into the various murders of some well-known entertainer personalities, and I think that would be valuable as well. So I'm not sure how to structure this. I want to give you as much room to move as you'd like, but we can kind of go down that road. In terms of, you know, it is really interesting because last night I had a guy named Chip Tatum on you know who he is then.
He's a heavyweight guy.
Yeah.
For sure.
And I just did an interview with him, which you ought to watch. It's quite fascinating because we got to ask a lot of very sort of unexpected, piercing questions, I would say. And he did respond quite well and is interested in getting the truth out, even more so than I think he was even in the past when he's been sort of out doing interviews. So it's an interesting time. And he was mentioning, you know, because of his insider status and because he was also involved, I don't know if he said there were hits that he was involved with. He wasn't the hit man. He wasn't, I don't think, like a lone gunman hit man. He was a person who was part of a team who were involved in various operations, and as a result, people died. But he certainly knows that world, and he would be very interested, I think, to hear about your book and to hear about these stories that these things you're going to be covering. So maybe at some point in the future, we could even get the two of you together to compare notes.
I would love that. I would really, really appreciate that. Chip Tatum is, I even had in the first version of my book, I had a chapter called the Tatum Chronicles.
Oh.
Because he was part of this hit team that I'm talking about, a variation of it. I think it was called G2. And that was George Bush Sr.'s personal hit team that was sent, right, left and center, taking out people internationally. So he really knows what he's talking about very much from the inside. And he was also involved in many different areas, in the Iran-Contra scandal and also other scandals, you know, with Pablo Escobar was involved and so on. So I was very afraid that he had been taken out because he and his wife disappeared for quite a few years. And he's just surfaced now, as far as I know, a year ago or something like that. So
yeah.
I was very, very happy that they didn't get to him.
Yes,
so
absolutely.
I would see that. You know, I would be extremely interested if we could do something like that. That would be
okay,
amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, it would be quite fascinating, I think, with your perspective to have us get into a conversation and do that in a public forum such as this. So at this moment, do you want to talk about sort of the structure of an assassination, what goes on? Because I know we've done that on other broadcasts, but just to set the scene here for the people that haven't heard the other broadcasts, in terms of there are certain ingredients that seem to go into a setup of what appears to be the assassination of a major personality, especially a political leader. And the similarities in the Palma and then the Kennedy assassination, how it was set up, the idea that they always select a patsy and so on.
Yeah, for sure. It's like I say, I spent some 30 years doing this and I've looked into so many different cases, and it's by comparing different cases that you start after a while getting a clearer and clearer picture of how these assassinations are carried out. And it's like you say, it's almost like they follow like a template, like a bullet point list of how to commit a hit and how to dupe the population into thinking that it was the deed of a lone crazy guy or something like that. So I would be very happy to go into just outline the detail of one of these templates. I can do one for an assassination, and then I can do another one for like a terror act, an explosion or mass shooting or something like that.
Okay.
So when it comes to assassinations, normally the people that are taken out are either enemies of this group, this global elite, or it could also be a member, one of their own members, that have started acting in a way that they cannot trust this person anymore. Maybe he's become too big-headed, or he's just starting his own agenda. So there's different ways of getting rid of these people. First, they try to discredit them or destroy their character. You know, that can be made by scandals. They can pump in money in your bank account that you can't account for, you know, big amounts of money, so that it looks like you've been bribed. Or they can make different scandals with credit cards, or that fill your computer with pedophile pictures or whatever to discredit you. If they can't do that, then it goes to a more violent variation. And many times people are taken out, accidents, suicides, cancer, very quick growing cancers, and so on. But from time to time, they need to sort of make statue an example, especially if there's movement in the ranks, sort of like if there's other whistleblowers that might come up to the surface. And that's when they statue examples. They do that just like with JFK, then they do it out in the open and in a violent way. And I would say that the reason why they took out Kennedy right in the middle, in the middle of the day, in front of all these people with cameras and all of these things, was to show and make a statement that we can get anyone, anywhere, at any time. So back off and get back in time. This is also why after one of these assassinations, there will almost be like a secondary conspiracy of silence, absolute silence that follows these. It's the official story, and nothing else. Anyway, so if we go back to how they prepare these things, nowadays, the last 10-15 years, it's become a lot more high-tech, I think, with satellites and so on when it comes to the surveillance. But I'll just go back a little bit in history on how they did it, because this is also, I think it continues to this day as well. Normally, they would send in like a surveillance team, first of all, that would consist of like maybe 9 people in three teams of three. These people would be in contact by radio, but not often not meeting each other, not seeing each other, only knowing each other by code names and coming from different backgrounds, different groups. It's all a matter of compartmentalizing, that you will only know your little part. You will not know the whole picture. They keep that as a standard template, very, very separate. So nobody can grasp, nobody can tell on other people. And if any of the people involved in one of these assassinations start asking questions, they would be taken out right away. That is one of these unspoken rules. So the people that are doing these things don't ask each other questions either. And not before an assassination, not after. It's never mentioned. They talk about hamburgers and films and nothing else, nothing that has real importance. Okay, so this team goes in, and what they do is for some weeks they start surveilling the victim to become. They check out all his habits, his routes, how he goes, where he goes, and also where would be a good place to take him out. So when they while they do this, they also check out where escape cars could be. There's also always multiple escape cars for the hit teams to get out. And so there's a lot of work put into finding out if, you know, like the timing of traffic lights, or if there's traffic jams or train crossings or dead end streets, all these type of things, so that they will not be caught in an unpleasant situation. Okay, so while they go, they're keeping this guy under surveillance, they also look into his, that's not done by the surveillance team, but by other people that are part of the conspiracy. They look into the background and the situation around this person. For instance, if he's a politician, they will check out who what type of enemies have you got? What are the real enemies, so that they can start building false trails leading in all different directions to confuse the whole thing. So they will make things point to these enemies. Very often this is done after the person is shot, then an anonymous phone call is made saying this was the work of Bader Meinhof, or this was the work of whoever, you know, whatever enemy the victim had. They will start pointing in different direction right away. Okay, so the surveillance team would be there for a few weeks, mapping all the whole thing. And in the meantime, the people behind the assassination will start to prepare a patsy. They will prepare evidence that will point towards this guy or group, depends on what it is. And the person that they frame make up as the fall guy is somebody that he needs to work well on in media. He needs to look strange or have a violent background or say weird things. Or nowadays also, I know at least two of these so-called mass shootings, the patsy that have been blamed, the reason why they picked this guy was because of what the dads were doing, that the fathers of these two suspects were involved in trying to reveal what was going on in the global elite's background, you know, with money, illegal money transfers and so on. So they sort of, by taking out the son, they shut down the dad as well and stopped these unpleasant investigations.
Yes.
So, and also this patsy, in the old days it used to be the East German, East European, Russian in the Cold War. Then that's changed after the wall went down. The trend went into the Muslim because they work really well. They're dark. They look scary. If you're not familiar with Arab people or from other countries, they have dark eyebrows. They work well in media when it comes to being blamed as a boogeyman. They have strange names, and they come from countries you can't even spell, and so on. And also, we've been so pumped over the last 30 years about Islam equals terrorism and Muslim equals terrorist, which is absolutely not true. It's just what we're being fed at the time. So, but now the Muslim part has worn out a bit. So now they've started doing the geek type or the pacifist. It's coming to the truth seekers. Now it's the truth seekers that are the new terrorists, I'm sure. And so they're sort of, it's also to scare people more and more so that they would ask for more and more protection, because they, by having a patsy or a fall guy that will look even maybe peaceful, like a yogi or like a priest or whatever, normal people would start fearing their own neighbors or family members and so on, just asking for more and more protection and more military police type. Anyway, so you got the surveillance team in, you prepared the patsy, you're preparing the evidence so that as soon as the shots are fired, the evidence will point patsy, patsy, patsy away from who actually committed it. At the same time, also, you prepare your own investigation, which is on standby, where this is people that you control. I'm not now talking if I was the one behind it, people that I control. I only need to be able to control the key people, the top people in this investigation, but the main task is that they would knock out all normal, honest, decent policemen and detectives, so that they have absolutely no possibility of looking into or affecting any of the work. They would just be pushed out of the way, and that investigation will only have one task, and that task is to point in any other direction than the real truth, which would be inwards. They will focus totally on the patsy. They will look in all the wrong places, and they will, one of their main work jobs as well is to stop people like myself from finding out. So they will, the people you use are the ones you should be aware of. These are the people that I came to the point where I feared the police in Sweden, which is really sick when it comes to that point. Anyway, so you got surveillance team checking out the victim. Also, what they try to, sometimes they try to infiltrate the bodyguard so that when the actual hit gets closer, the bodyguard will be pulled back. It's just like a, what do you call it, this poor lamb, slaughter lamb that is brought forward to be killed. They take away. It's really, really such a cowardly way of doing it, but that's the way I do it. Yes. Anyway, when all of this is prepared, then you fly in the hit team itself. And this hit team consists of, normally it's very high-skilled killers, highly disciplined, right wing most of the time, soldiers of fortune, security men, former policemen, military people, that type of thing. These are also, they don't know each other most of the time from before. They work under code name. They only know their task. They don't know why this person is taken out. They have absolutely no personal interest in it at all, or no emotional anything in it. They're just there to take care of business. And so they're flown in, and they're taken care of by local people. Often this is local, once again, right wing. We're talking right wing normally. Police and security people that take care of them. They move them from safe house to safe house so that the neighbors will not start suspecting anything. They will supply them with cars, logistics, weapons, ammo, food, all of these things. So, okay, so they're taken care of. Also, they help them with like the weapons, you know, to calibrate everything so the weapons are in perfect condition. And they supply them with escape cars as well. So you got everything set. Then when it gets close to the actual hit, sometimes they have a drill going on, but that's more when it comes to mass shootings or bomb attacks. There will be a drill that will be an identical copy of what actually happens. But in when it comes to assassinations, that's not really the case. Okay, so what happens next is that you have, most of the time, there's more than one shooter, multiple shooters, triangular fire, so that there's option one, two, three, and so on, should something go wrong. And also in the vicinity of this murder site, you will have people in uniform, police cars and so on. These are not normal police cars or normal policemen, but people that are involved in the hit. And their task is to stop the normal people from chasing the killers or interfering. So anyway, so we're getting close and boom, the guy is shot and taken out. So what happens next is that there will be a delay from instead of if something normal happened, the police would just whoop, be there right away. But when these things happen, there's like a delay so that the people who the perpetrators will have a chance to get away. And so, like I say, there's this delay so that people can get out of the way. And once they get away, then boom, the police goes in and they close all the doors and like really start looking. But they know that it's already, you know, they're way out. They're gone a long time ago. So at that point, there's this immense search looking for the killers. Oh, we had to find a killer. Oh, we had to find a killer. And then the investigation, my investigation, jumps in right away. And their main task is to talk to the media. And they would say, oh, my God, it's so awful that this happened. Oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God. But it's the patsy, it's the patsy, it's the patsy. And while this is going on, there's a technical team going to the murder site. And they're looking for evidence. That's what they say. But what they're doing is getting rid of, they clean the murder site for the real evidence and plant evidence pointing towards the patsy. That's their task.
Yes.
Then, and that's more or less the way it goes. Then what happens afterwards is that if their plan is to make people think that it's the case is fixed right away, you know, taken care of. It's solved right away. It was the patsy. Boom, you grab the patsy. Sometimes he's killed. Sometimes he's put away. Sometimes he's wounded so he can't speak or something like that. Or it's one of these mind control poor guys.
Yes.
That are blamed for it, and they put them away forever. Then if somebody like myself or the press keeps pushing, saying, come on, you have to look into this because there's so much, many of these details that don't make any sense. You have to reopen this case or continue. Then if the pressure is big enough, in the end, they will put a so-called commission there. And the commission's task will be to look at the murder investigation, not the crime itself, not the crime, but the investigation. How was the investigation done? And that will drag out for like a year or so. And they will manufacture millions of absolute useless documents, loads of paper that looks very impressive. And the result will always be the same. And the result is that they say, well, it's such a pity that the investigation didn't get the right guy. Or if they got the patsy, then they would say, well, the investigation got the right guy. And that's it. Everything is the way it should. We've looked into it. They could have done a better job, but we're fine. And we've done a great job. Then if the criticism continues, like in Sweden, we've had three commissions. But the jobs the commission have done is to look at the other commissions. And so it's very important to understand that these commissions are part of the assassination themselves. They're part of the whole thing.
Yes.
It's the cover-up tool of the elite, the power that was behind the assassination, these
right.
commissions.
Yes.
And you will see also that many times the members of different commissions, it's the same members, they just swap around. In one commission, he's the chairman, then he's the secretary, then it's his cousin. You know, they just make an illusion of a democracy of that this is an honest investigation and so on. So that is the template, more or less, they use when it comes to assassinations.
Yeah, absolutely, and well done. Very interesting. I would say that that's pretty accurate based on my knowledge of watching all the false flags that we've been having here in America. This would take place in the Aurora shooting, also Sandy Hook. Of course, in the case of Sandy Hook, we also have... I don't know if you've actually mentioned this, but I just want to bring it back up. Incompetent policemen. So purposefully incompetent, you know, members of law enforcement who somehow do things that are, if a law enforcement person were to watch it, or a lot of times it's filmed, it's televised, you know, because they televise the part where they're looking for the evidence and all that kind of thing. And, mm-hmm. And oftentimes it's some level of incompetence in that, you know, within the law enforcement area that sort of they use as sort of a loophole to say why something wasn't recovered, like why the murder weapon wasn't recovered or why it was tainted in some way or the
their
scene.
Their task is to be incompetent. They are not... supposed to be efficient. They're not supposed to find out the truth. They're not supposed to find out what is going on. And sometimes they use people that are not very clever as well to be put in charge of these. They're easily controlled, not very clever, and easily manipulated by these the people
right.
higher up in the power pyramid.
The other thing that we've been noticing here in America is that there are a lot of what we find are actors now being hired to to behave as though they were innocent bystanders that then suddenly got involved accidentally, sometimes completely false things going on, such as a person in a wheelchair who's not really a person in a wheelchair, things of this nature. Have you noticed that in your studies?
God, yeah. And I think the reason why, I just have a theory myself, and that is because if you, on a regular basis, commit these atrocities, every single time you kill someone, you will have a problem, especially with mothers, that will not back down. They will not give up until they found out what actually happened to their son, their daughter, their relative, whatever. And if you do this on a regular basis, suddenly the line of people that are breathing down your neck is long, you know. So I think especially they I think after 9/11, that was a major problem for them, because there was just so many that that was sort of on their case. So they now, with these so-called mass shootings, I mean, like you say, now they're not even real. They're staged event with real actors. I mean, they're not even victims. It's just like a film set. And I think the reason why they did was that was to keep it in as small group as possible. That's why they even use the same actors for different events. I mean, it's so sloppy nowadays. It used to be good budget, good planning, you know, way beforehand. Now it's like, come on, slop, slop, slop. In here, we use the same people again. We swapped them around. You died last time. Now you can be the headmaster. No, sorry, you were the headmaster last time. Now, I mean, they've got the same police chief and like two or three of them, and it's in different states. You know, same name, same hat, same guy. Come on. It's like so badly done.
Yes.
But thank God for that, because it makes it so much easier for someone like myself. It used to be very hard. Now it's, I mean, my aide do it right away. She can just say, what is he doing there again? Did you say he was dead? Yes, I did. Very clever.
Yeah, well, and this is where they're picking out actors that are repeatedly hired for jobs all over the United States. Every assassination, they show up. Every time they claim to be a witness, every time they say whatever the party line's supposed to be to misdirect. So it's been crazy.
Yeah. If you want to, I can go through the template for one of these mass shootings or bomb.
Yeah, sure. Go right ahead.
Because I think it's very important to become aware of these, because it's only once you see how it's done, you won't buy it anymore. Mm-hmm. Next time it happens and they blame it on some poor sod, and you see these different steps, you were just like, whoa, 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 hang on. Let me check out the facts before I buy into this. So is it okay if I just go through?
Yes, one? Absolutely. Go right ahead.
When it comes to these mass shootings and especially bombs, they love the bombs, like 9/11, Oklahoma City, the 7/7 bombs in London, the Madrid bombs, and so on. There's so many of them.
Yeah.
What they use is it's an old Roman tactic, a three-step rocket that they call problem, reaction, solution. These are the three steps: problem, reaction, solutions. If you study history and you see, like for instance, when there were military coups done in South America, where military junta was supported by Kissinger and the states. I mean, we're talking about the same global elite that was funding these overtakes as well. Anyway, what happened was that a group of militaries went in and overnight they killed the whole government, or they killed the president or whatever. They took over power in a very violent coup. And that was good from their point of view, very quick, easily done and so on. But from that day, they started having massive problems, because they had problems with demonstrations, they had riots, they had all of these things. So they had to do all these mass arrests. So they put thousands of people in jail. Then they had problems with their families and friends. Then they had to torture them to find out where the rest was. Then they had to kill them to empty the prisons. Then they had to fill stadiums with them. Then, you know, like in the end, they needed almost as many soldiers as there were people in the population. Not the way to do it. The way to do it is to secretly create a problem. Nowadays, it's the trend at the moment, mass shootings. The reason for that is for so we'll get back to that. But if we take a bomb, which is, let me do a bomb instead. Okay, if I would like, for instance, if you compare London 15 years ago with London today, it's a totally different place. And they've done it in exactly with this method. Same with the States. If you go back before 9/11 and compare to the state today, I mean, it's like different planets. And so, for instance, if I live here in Spain, let me say that I want to do something like that. I want the police in Spain to have a walk around with a bazooka, kick in doors without, they can do whatever they want. I want surveillance cameras everywhere. I want people not to have the possibility to have a lawyer to just arrest them without, they can be detained for however long or whatever. If that is what I want, if I just push that, let me see, say I'm the president of Spain now or the person in charge. If I just push that on the Spanish community, same problem. I would have exactly the same problems as the coup d'etat I was talking about in South America. So what I do is I secretly create a problem so that I can get a reaction so I can move in with my solution. Okay, so this problem have for many, many times have been a bomb. So what I do is I place a bomb very strategically. It needs to be in a public place. It needs to be where as many people as possible can be hurt and affected so that they would think, oh, my God, it could have been me. Oh, my God, it could have been my sister and so right. on. And one of the key factors in this is also it needs to hit, it needs to kill children and women. Women and children, that's the key ones, because they are seeking for the emotional impact. The emotional reaction. They do not want you to think with your brain. They want you to get emotional. So this is why daycare centers, school, preschools, old people's home doesn't work. No, no, no. Any foreigners, no, doesn't work either. Children and women, that's the key one. Okay, so the bomb is placed in a public place near subway stations, near where there's a lot of traffic. And it's also important at what time of day, because it needs to be normally they do it in the morning when you're emotional, more vulnerable. You've just woken up, you're sort of you're on your way to your work, you just driven your kids to school and so on, so you're not really awake and so on, and then boom, it goes off. So what they do is, like I say, also they nowadays they almost every single time there's a drill, an identical drill of the actual happening that is going on at the same time. Also, so that the people that are involved in this drill have no idea when suddenly this drill goes live. So they still, like in London, when the bombs blew off in the subway. The normal police that were standing outside the subway saying, oh my God, it looks so realistic. Can you look at these people coming out? It really looked like they were dying. They were just, they didn't help them because they thought these are actors.
Yeah.
It's not real. But it was because the drill had gone live right in the middle of the whole thing. And one of the reasons why they do this, I think, is to be able to put in the explosives to get everything in the right position, and also to get the patsies to lure them into the right position where they can be blamed for the whole thing. Okay, so we got the bomb in place. We got we're back to the same thing. My investigation is on standby. I prepared a patsy, a group. When it comes to bombs, they go for groups. That's easier, and also that can be people or they have problems with anyway. Truth seekers now will be a future one. They would love to get rid of us. So I would say blame the truth seekers. And they leak it out in media. They were sort of like, ooh, these truth seekers, you know, they have secret meetings. They talk to each other and they say things, you know, they talk about conspiracy and bombs, you know. So they're up to something. You will leak that out in media, not very obvious, but so that the subconscious of people will start, ooh, these truth seekers, they're weird, and they have you know, they grow vegetables and they eat vegetarian. Oh my God, that's a strange group. Okay, so you pump that into the subconscious. So we got the whole same thing as from the HIT team template. You use this one as well. You got your own investigational standby. You got the evidence prepared. You got the patsy prepared. You got all of these things. So we come to the point where it's time for the bomb to go off. People have just had their coffee. They're still not really awake. And media's on standby, ready, steady, go, boom, off goes the bomb. And then you pump out all of these horrific images on TV, getting to create the reaction so that people sit at home, but, oh, my God, something needs to be done. Something needs to be done. We need to stop this. And then they turn towards me, who secretly placed the bomb there, asking me that they elected to come with a solution. And then I would say, ooh, the only way I can deal with such a dangerous group like these truth seekers that eat vegetables and have meetings on Tuesday, the only way I can deal with them is like with like super armed helicopters, tanks in the streets, bazookas, you name it. And people would say, yes, please, please. And they're up with a flag and the national theme. Dur, 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 dur. I would come in on the red, on the white horse, become the hero. I will get rid of all these awful truth seekers, get rid of them, chop them up into small pieces, put them away on Guantanamo Bay or whatever, and solve the problem. Martial law, they love martial law as well at the moment, so that people get used to more and more tanks and all of these things. Oh, it's nothing really, and we've seen it so many times. So that the day when it really matters, you won't react. And then what they do is they leave these militant police and soldiers and everything in the streets after they've taken the patsies, but they leave them there for a couple of weeks just so you get used to them. And then when it's all over, you withdraw, but you leave about 20% of them for your protection. It's for your protection. I'm the hero and I'm here to protect you. Protect you from whom? You should be protected from me. Mm-hmm. And this is the whole thing with these mass shootings. You have to watch and see what comes afterwards. What is the reaction? What is it that they're pumping out? When it comes to mass shootings, they want you to give up your guns. They want the guns to be the problem. Not that it's a crazy guy. They say it's the weapon. You have to give up your weapons. And it's not that you can shoot somebody with a single bolt army rifle. No, they want to go for the semi-automatic. They want to go. I'm not a pro-gun person, absolutely pro-violent, absolutely not. But I'm saying at the same time, the people who have demanded that the population put down their guns are people like Stalin, Hitler, Mao, and so on. And you, especially in the States, are frontline, I would say, when it comes to these things, because you are the only population in the world that are armed. And that is why all these so-called mass shootings, I'm not sure there's been one real one. As far as I know, every single one I looked into, there's been very suspicious things about them all. They're aimed there to de-arm the population.
Yes, yes. And actually, I would say that this is continuing as we speak. In other words, every month or every, other month, they seem to have a situation so that they can keep drumming. I mean, this is like the biggest obstacle they have to taking over and actually taking down the United States right now for the government to, really put in place martial law, et cetera, is to get rid of the guns. So that is the one thing that at least most of the Americans that I hear talking about this, at least we're hip to. At least we know that that's the one thing that Americans will never give up. Mm. And this is what makes us difficult to control at the final analysis. But it is fascinating, these killings, these crazy things, these murders in schools. They love to have the shooter be a kid or somebody, you know, a teenager or somebody like that, so that they can say, well, see, it was the gun that got in the hands of the young person, et cetera, et cetera, and then try to drum home their agenda. For sure. Absolutely.
Listen, Carrie, I can only say after 30 years, this is a major part of my life. Or I have not, I think, come across a real terrorist, what is labeled a terrorist.
Yes.
Every single time, I've looked into so many different things on a global scale, every single time it goes back and it points back, if you dig deep enough, back to the same power elite, global power elite we're talking about. It's been funded, they've been trained, they've been equipped by the same people. They're doing it again and again and again. And it's, I'm talking about a global elite that is higher than national borders. It's not a matter of the States or England or France or anything like that. It is the handpicked people from these countries that are in these groups. And I've been researching up to a certain level. I know there's higher levels, but I come up to a level where there's like three, four main groups. It's the Bilderberg Group, it's the Council on Foreign Relations, and it's the Trilateral Commission.
Yes.
Also the Committee of 300. And once you start seeing these people and see how they work together, we're talking insiders, how they are part of these things, how they are... when you have these mass shootings or something, you will see them in key position doing things, manipulating, duping the population into the situation. And I just want to say, all of these years, I truly believe that Kennedy was the last real elected president, even though there was some fraud involved in his election as well because of his dad with the Chicago mob. But every single one of them, it was a coup d'etat. It was a slaughter of an honest person. And the people that killed him are still in power to this very day.
Yes, yes. In fact, I asked Chip Tatum that very question last night, and he said the same thing. He agrees with you, and this has always been my premise, that Kennedy, there was the coup d'etat, the official coup d'etat of the American government. Since then, we have had basically a new... What we call the Bush cabal has been running America, and the New World Order as part of that, and the Mossad being involved, as well as what, as far as Camelot's concerned, gets into the Nazis that never lost the war, really, that went to Argentina and went here into the United States, became part of the secret space program, and so on. So
it's quite extensive. The way I see it, the New World Order is the Fourth Reich. It's the same mentality, same group of people that have just, they didn't make it all the way with Hitler. And then after the Second World War, people thought, oh, thank God we got rid of the Nazi war machine. No, you did not. You imported them.
That's right.
Operation Paperclip, you got them into the States. You built up
That's
NASA
right.
with them. You built up the OSS that later turned into the CIA.
Mm-hmm.
You built up the banking system. They just infiltrated. It was not just a few. There were like thousands of them.
Yes.
And all the big leaders, you sacrificed a few in Nuremberg and say, oh, thank God we got rid of them and hang them and shot them or whatever. But the major part was still active, and the people that founded them, like where Prescott Bush was one of them, George Bush Sr.'s father.
Yes.
He was one of the, not the one that paid from his own pocket, but he was one of the people that put the funds in the German war machine and so on. They're still there. They're still there. And I think it's so critical to understand that the people that people trust in the White House and so on are super, super, super criminals on a scale that is just mind-blowing once you dig into it. It's like, They look really respectable, and they dress nice, and they have nice cars and so on. But look behind it, and it's just like, oh my God, what is going on? And how, why are we tolerating it? Why are we so asleep that we cannot see what's going on?
Yes.
For me, that is incredible.
And this is in all the countries of the world. It appears that anyone who really gets to a certain level in government has to be bought off, has to be part of this group. They just do not seem to be able to get there to those levels without signing away their life. I know Mike Harris. I don't know if you know that radio talk show host, but he ran for governor of Arizona, and he basically was given an ultimatum. You know, you sign this piece of paper, you do what we say, or you don't run. And then they tried to kill him when he refused. He backed out of the race. They had his wife sue him for divorce or all this kind of thing. I mean, you know, this is what goes on. They frame you, you know, and those stories are out there as well. You know, in other words, putting something, according to Chip Tatum, he was talking about, well, it's in this article by David Guyette, a well-known investigative reporter who talks about the use of certain drugs like this scopolamine or something like that, where people don't remember what they did and commit acts of whatever it happens to be, and then they film it and then they show it to them and say, this is going public if you don't toe the line.
They used to, I know one case that Chip Tatum was talking about was a man by the name of Calderon, as far as I know, who was an acquaintance of Ronald Reagan and so on, where they did an awful thing, absolutely awful. They gave this man this drug. I can't, it was very close to what you said.
Scopolamine, yes. Yeah. I'm not sure how you say it.
And what they did was he was totally out of his mind. They got this male prostitute in and doing all of these sexual acts, filming them. And then they had him kill him, or they killed him, and the cannibalistic, awful things, you know, filming the whole thing. Yeah. And then when he woke up, he had absolutely no idea. They showed him this thing, and what can you do? He just totally folded, you know, and obeyed them.
Right.
And this is not just one, okay, I mean, there's so many of these.
Thing
what you said about politicians, it's like the same within the Freemasonry system as well, because there's a lot of Freemasonry networks that are entangled into this, where you get to a certain level and there are these tests that you are not aware of what is the right answer, what is the wrong, you know, what is the wrong. But you will just see that you don't get any further. You just come to a certain level, and if you don't pass the test, you will not get up there.
Yes.
And so I think it's exactly the same. It's gone so far now that if you want to get up in the ranks, you have to do it by showing your loyalty and sometimes dipping your hand in blood.
The side, the law enforcement side. In other words, the area where a person doesn't really get to a high level in law enforcement unless they have played the game and gone along with the agenda. And so many of these, I think, especially what it appears is police departments are bought off. They are incompetent to the extreme. They are manned by people that are compromised. And Serpico, you know, I guess you made the famous movie with Al Pacino, a famous, you know, whistleblower in essence, who was turned on by in the ranks, of course, the police. This story has been told many times, but this it's not just the top. It's also the law enforcement, and then of course Congress people. And there's a big thing happening right now with the Congress people, apparently, where first of all they're all given Swiss bank accounts. And they're given, you know, this story about this, where, and this would be in other countries as well. In other words, the House of Lords, I'm sure, is involved in this kind of thing, where these individuals are, in essence, bought off with whether it's a Swiss bank account and certain financial dealings that are then illegal because they get access to insider insider trading or some, there's, of course, I don't know if you know about the, what are called the trading programs, collateral trading programs that involve $100 million is the least amount you can invest. So it's a very high level investment scheme. Have you heard about this?
No.
Oh, well, this is worldwide for their elite. And it's one of the ways they steal money from even wealthy people who get sort of involved in this, not knowing what they're involved in. They're told it's a very special thing. They get to sign, they sign a non-disclosure, whatever it is. They give them their, you know, $100 million, and they have to then be quiet about the investment. But basically, it's supposed to bring back about 150% in returns for about 18 months. Sometime during that 18 months, they then withdraw, you know, the money. They stop giving them their returns and take all their money. And then the wealthy person is left with nothing because they cannot go to the authorities because it's an illegal, you know, a clandestine scheme. I'm sure that there's threats of you know, of death as well that go along with that. But there's a person named Ed Falcone that was part of this kind of thing. I think Leo Wanta might have been involved in this kind of thing. I know that there are others that have been involved in these schemes. This thing, these collateral trading programs, have not really made it to the press. Anybody who talks about them, they say they don't exist. And even law enforcement have been told to investigate it, have basically come up supposedly empty and saying, oh no, this is a rumor, it doesn't exist. But I know people behind the scenes that know, for, you know, that have told me, sources, that this is absolutely real. So this is, in other words, this is in the financial sector. So, and of course, we're having so much fraud right now in the financial sector, as you can appreciate, right? And you must have heard about the deaths of the bankers recently, the one that jumped off the building in London, and one here in America, an economist, I think, was killed. Well, these people were killed. There were hits. And Illuminati hits also what appear to be, they also, have you gone into this side of things where they actually, they're not just sloppy, but they actually are sloppy on purpose, but they also, they want people to realize that it's an Illuminati hit. And so they murder a person in a certain obvious way, and there are certain ways that they prefer. It sends a signal out to all the other people, whether it be Congress people or whistleblowers that might start to crop up, for example, in the financial sector. And they see that somebody has been done. The hit was done, the person died, but they died in a way that is Illuminati signal, and it will have symbolism around it.
That's exactly what I meant with that, making statue examples, you know, to make people back off, to understand who's behind it, and right, to shut up.
Yes.
Because this is the only thing they have problems with is the truth. That is the truth is the one that they're trying to suppress. You know?
Yes.
So that is why truth seekers are not very popular. And that's why it's a bit, well, you know it, I know it. It's a tricky minefield you walk in.
Right. Absolutely. So from here, in terms of, we were going to talk about certain entertainers.
Yeah.
Right. Do you want to go down the road of talking about any particular entertainers where you've done some investigation into their, those particular kinds of deaths?
I could do that. In that case, I would like to go back in history a little while because,
sure,
like I said, I found very strong evidence showing that many, if not, I would say almost all of these events are connected, at least the major ones. And the strong links I found is a group called Operation 40. It was a group that was created in the late 50s, early 1960s, on the order of President Dwight Eisenhower. Dwight Eisenhower was helped to become president by Prescott Bush, the father of George Bush Sr., who was also the, how shall I say, the guy who led Richard Nixon and helped him sort of. So what happened was that Prescott Bush was sort of in the background, and the whole elite that he was representing was behind Eisenhower coming to power. So the thing at that time, they had problems with Che Guevara and other people in the Dominican Republic, in Guatemala, especially in Latin America and so on. So what they did was Richard Nixon was given the task to create a hit team of skilled assassins that could be used on an international level. So what they did was that they took mostly from Cuba. they picked them up in Miami and started training them. And it was a group of between 40 and 86 in the beginning. They were like former military, Cuban military, Air Force, police, Secret Service, that type of people, violent, many of them violent and very hateful against towards Castro. So they were put together with people from the CIA, people like Ted Shackley, people like David Attlee Phillips, E. Howard Hunt, and David Morales, and so on. And trained to become very skilled at what they were doing, all types of assassinations, poison, explosives, shootings, guerrilla warfare, you name it. This group was aimed at Castro to start with. It was financed by money from the military-industrial complex, the oil tycoons in Texas, and also companies that were thrown out from these countries in Latin America and Cuba and so on. And the person that was put in charge of the funding was George Bush Sr. He was a young man at that time, but getting more involved with the CIA. His right hand at that point was a man by the name of Felix Rodriguez. Felix Rodriguez was later one of the key people and closest associate to Oliver North in the Iran-Contra scandal. You will see when I start talking about these people, I will show how they're connected with all these events down the line. And we will get to the musicians as well in the end, if you bear with me.
Okay.
So this group, when... as I said, they started out, they were aimed at Castro. They did several attempts on his life. They did on the president of the Dominican Republic. And also some of these people that I mentioned were involved in when they hit the president of Guatemala in 1954. But then when, after the Cuban Missile Crisis, when suddenly Kennedy, I think it was when he sat with his finger on the button, being the one that could have started a nuclear war against Russia, people who were there said that he, with tears in his eyes, he just said, "I refuse to be the one who does this to the world." And I think that was sort of almost like an enlightening, like an awakening for Kennedy from being a very easily manipulated playboy that the global elite and the mob could play around with. Suddenly he became a very strong individual who just said, "Listen, enough. This is total madness what's going on, and we need to stop it." So from that point, suddenly he wanted to withdraw out of Vietnam, a war that hadn't really started but was crucial for the global elite because of the drug trade from the, what do you call it, the Golden Triangle. Indochina and so on. This was a war that had been going on for a long time with France and Vietnam, but it was all about drugs. And at that point, the states had only like 16,000 advisors in Vietnam and Laos. And so the war hadn't really taken off. And he said, "We're going to withdraw out of Vietnam by the end of 1965. Everybody should be out. I'm going to crush the CIA into 1,000 pieces." The CIA that came from the OSS, the whole Nazi buildup that is so involved in so many other things. he took away the power from the CIA. He knocked out three of the top leaders, which later very much involved in the assassination himself, like the CIA director Alan Dulles, General Charles Cabell, and so on. These, like, they were holy cows, untouchables. He kicked them out. Mm-hmm. He also wanted to get free from the Federal Reserve, which is a super criminal institution that totally illegally controls the financial situation in the States and globally as well through the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund and so on. So these were just some of it. Also, there was things against Israel with the nuclear things, and there were many different reasons why they suddenly wanted him out. But so that what they did was they turned the cannon that was aimed at Castro, and they aimed it at Kennedy instead. So that day when he was taken out in Dealey Plaza, the shooters, I can go into great details about who they were and everything, but it was a combination of people from Operation 40, people from the Chicago mob, people from CIA, people from Secret Service, and so on, in one big, yes. Also people from the mob in Louisiana and Miami and so on.
Yes.
So the many of the shooters that was there was from this Operation 40. One of the people was a man by the name of David Morales, or David Morales. He was born in Arizona. Very, very violent man. He was called the top assassin of Latin America later on. And he was in Dealey Plaza when JFK was shot, not one of the shooters, but one of the drivers of the escape cars. And he was also at the Ambassador Hotel when Robert Kennedy was taken out, as well as another guy who was in Dealey Plaza. His name was Hale Braden. He was the guy who led some of the killers into the Deltex building, where one of the people that was there in that building when the shots were fired was George Bush Sr., okay? And this George Bush Sr., he's so central. This Bush family are so central in so many of these things,
yes.
Including 9/11. I mean, it's incredible. On the scale of their criminality is just,
yes.
Mind-blowing.
Off the charts.
Off the charts. This David Morales was later very central in many of these operations globally, and he was also the guy who actually killed Che Guevara in Bolivia. The guy that was put in charge to track him down by George Bush Sr. was Felix Rodriguez, the guy I mentioned before.
Okay.
So, and he's still to this day, if he's still alive, I know 2004 he was the chairman of the veterans from the Bay of Pigs invasion, but he carries around Che Guevara's rich watch on his arm. He's very proud of that one. And also, there's so many of these exiled Cubans, especially, that have been used as this tool of terror. They were part of blowing up Orlando Letier in Washington at Embassy Road. I don't know if you remember that, a car bomb that was blown up him. They were part of the overthrow of Salvador Allende in Chile. They were part of Operation Condor, when they tracked down and killed multiple supporters of Allende globally. They were part of the murder of Pablo Neruda, the Nobel Prize winning poet in Chile. They were part of the killing of Robert Smith and South killing. They were even part of killing Olof Palme in Sweden. People that were in Dealey Plaza 1963 were in Sweden 1986 taking part of that assassination. And it just goes on and on.
Incredible.
And can I just say, the night when John Lennon was murdered, it's important to understand what was going on at that time. He just, after having been very quiet for quite a few years, taking care of his son and family and so on, he had planned a comeback. He just recorded a new comeback album together with Yoko Ono. And they were planning for this big peace tour going around the States, and also most probably going around the globe and so on. And the whole thing for the problem for this military-industrial complex and the global elite, their agenda is death and destruction. They want war. They crave it. Their main tools in this whole game is death and destruction, and other parts of it is oil, weapons, illegal weapons, drugs. These are the main ingredients in these minerals as well, and so on. But like I say, so peace, people that stand up and speak up for peace become enemies of this group. Mm-hmm. And especially when people listen to them, that's why people like Mahatma Gandhi, Lady Diana, Martin Luther King, John F. Kennedy to a certain extent, John Lennon, Bob Marley, who was murdered as well, I'm going to come to that in a slow murder, and so on, become their enemies. Lady Diana, if I didn't mention her.
Yes.
And very sadly, these people, many of them have been taken care of, you know, because they've been standing up for this peace. Because when millions of people listen to them, they have a problem because people will not follow their orders anymore. And John and Yoko had just, they came in the limo on the way back from the studio this evening. Mark Chapman, the guy who's blamed for the murder, he was, they say that he had been standing outside the house waiting for him the whole day. And when the limo arrived, he was standing to the right. And Yoko went out of the car first, and John came afterwards. And Yoko was like walking 5-6 meters ahead. They came to the Dakota building, and there's like this round open entrance. And John Lennon passed Mark Chapman, and then the official story is that Chapman pulled out a gun and fired 4 or 5 shots at him. John Lennon went down, started crawling into the building. Yoko Ono came out again. The doorman ran over, pulled off, took away the gun from him, screamed at him, "My God. Do you know what you did? You just killed you just shot Lennon. And from that point on, Mark Chapman was just standing like a zombie, waiting for the police to come and pick him up. Totally neutralized, like nothing. Mm-hmm. And but when you look at the evidence, that is the official story, that's the crime scene. But when you look at the evidence, you will find that all the shots hit Lennon straight from the left. And Chapman was standing on the right-hand side. Now, you go explain to me, how is that possible? Mm-hmm. Farmer Brown logic, it is not. The shooter must have been standing to the left. And who was standing to the left this evening was the doorman. So the following question would be, who was the doorman? His name, I mean, just when it happened, and then he disappeared into oblivion. It took like 7 years before his name was heard again. But his name was Jose Perdomo. And Jose Perdomo, when you track him backwards, was for 10 years, he was one of the highest ranking officers in Operation 40.
Wow.
Now you go figure again, what are the chances that yes. He was working as a doorman? Nowadays, when you look into it, they say he's a former CIA employee. Okay, but actually he was working for CIA, for Operation 40. And these people have been active on such... I mean, they're in their 80s now, many of them, and some of them are still active to this day. Hmm. Because there's evidence, there's some evidence that is now very new, it's come up to the surface very recently, that there was actually a second shooter at the Lennon thing as well. A man standing in the, there was an elevator shaft or whatever you want to call it, just a few meters further in as well, that there were two shooters there. Hmm. So, no, it's a very sad and tragic yes. event.
Absolutely. Well, okay, so in terms of other entertainers, do you have evidence or have you, you know, investigated, for example, I think you mentioned Whitney Houston in there. You also mentioned, I think, Michael Jackson.
Michael Jackson is one of the ones that I have not looked so much into.
Okay.
I just have not had the time. because you if anyone knows, my God, when you get into this, it's so complex. It's so,
yes,
there's so much to, you know, to go through in just one of these cases. And when you're involved with so many, it's just so time consuming. When it comes to, I would just like to mention Bob Marley before we go on. Because Bob Marley was also one of these people, people that were standing up for peace. He was a very, very strong individual. People that think that he was just one of these smokeheads sitting and saying, Rastafari German, in a corner. No, 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 no. This was a man who really was standing strong. And once again, that was one of the reasons why they feared him. In 75, I think it was, the CIA, together with Henry Kissinger and Operation 40, they were trying to destabilize Jamaica. They were taking one country at a time. And it came to a point, they pumped in guns and you know, there was lots of arsons and sabotage and bombings and shootings, and they pumped in automatic guns and all kind of things. So it came to a point where there was martial law on Jamaica. And at that point, Bob Marley was the figure, the person on Jamaica that could calm the whole situation down. And he was almost tricked into agreeing on playing on a concert. I think it was called the Goodness or Happiness Concert or Smile Concert. I can't really remember, but he was being used by the politician, not really knowing that they were triggering, because everybody knew whoever he would support would be the one that was going to win the election that was coming up very shortly. Anyway, he was there, and the people in power that tried to destabilize Jamaica, they were very aware of that. If this concert took off, you know, he could really unite the whole island, and that was something they did not want. They wanted to destabilize the whole situation. So just a week or so before the concert, one night there was Bob and his wife, and the manager was in the kitchen. They were standing at home after rehearsing, and the house was attacked by multiple shooters. There was especially one that he stuck his gun in and just fired all over the place. And Bob Marley's wife was hit in the back of the head. His manager was hit four times, I think. And Bob, there was a bullet that grazed his chest and launched in the arm. He was saved by a miracle almost. Anyway, he survived that and decided to do this concert anyway. And he came doing the concert with bandage and everything, and managed to get both of the leaders from the two parties up on stage, shaking hands and, you know, unite the whole situation. The thing was that the group that was sent to destabilize Jamaica, one of the people there was a man by the name of Luis Posada Carrillas, who was part of Operation 40. He's involved in, I cannot say how many different terror acts globally. Up until the year 2000, I can't remember, in 2000 he was released somewhere, but the thing that comes again and again is that these guys, they're put away, but then they're pardoned by George Bush Sr. Every single time they're being pardoned by them, even though they've been committing like hundreds of terror acts, blowing up airliners and you name it, then they get pardoned by it.
Let me ask you one question here before you continue, which I want you to do, so don't lose your track. But I actually want to ask you what. If you know this name, and I'm just searching for the name really quickly here, Robert Ferreira, does that strike you as a name that you recognize from the 40?
Nope.
Not offhand. Okay. All right. I just...
That's not... But there were so many of them. Like okay. I say, there were like...
He actually goes by more than one name.
they all have multiple identities, so this is also a tricky one. You know,
right.
they have sometimes up to 20 different aliases, so it's very hard to. Yeah, I mean, if
he
I,
crops
if
up
I
in the Bush in the Bush association with Bush in some investigations that a friend has done, and I was just curious.
No, I would love to look into it. I would not be surprised at all if he's one of the guys. Anyway, so it's very possible. I cannot prove it, but I think it's very possible that Luis Posada Carillas was part of the team that hit Bob Marley's house there. If not, he was one of the shooters, then he would be the one organizing it. I would think that they put one of these senior officers in charge of that. Anyway, after that concert, he was surrounded, you know, the people around him were very, you know, scared that something else would happen, that he would be killed. Also at that concert, you know, everybody thought he would be assassinated, but he was standing up, once again showing how brave he was by doing it. And once again, I think that sort of made an emphasis that they needed to get rid of him, because he wanted to unite also the African continent and free the black people and so on, which is something they do not want either, or did not want. So about a week after the concert, he was approached by this filmmaker, a documentary filmmaker, by the name of Carl Colby. And he said he wanted to make a documentary about Bob and so on. And also he brought with him a gift, a pair of boots that, you know, Bob was always, he was very into health and training and so on. He loved wearing jeans and he loved cowboy boots. So he was really happy for that one. He pulled one of the boots on, and when he did that, there were people that were there. There was a prize-winning photographer from LA who was there, and he said that Bob just shouted, you know, screamed out like, "Wow!" Like, they pulled off the boot, and inside the boot there was a piece of copper wire that had punctured his big toe. And this big is where his cancer later started, in the big toe, you know. And I don't know about you, but I've never heard about toe cancer. Maybe that is some medical thing that exists, but I've never heard of it before. And this is the toe that they wanted him to amputate. Then they would talk about amputating his whole leg, but he refused. He was so much into healthy living, and he said, "I'm going to beat this anyway." So, but then you see, you start asking who was the one who gave this present. And Carl Colby is the son of William Colby, the former director of the CIA.
Wow.
Once again, coincidence?
No. Yeah.
I'm not blaming him. Maybe he was not aware of what was
right
inside this this boot. I'm just saying that it was delivered that way.
Wow.
And another thing with Carl Colby is that he was also one of the witnesses in the O.J. Simpson case.
Really?
Do you know, once again, these people pop up like in different key situations in many
yes
of these. So
well,
I'm just pointing at them.
I'm being told that Ferreira, the name he goes by now is Rossier. So this just a trail. This has to do with Pure Heart Investments, which
is he active at the moment?
Well, we don't know. It's just some investigation, but okay. So how long did it take from that day when this thing happened to when Marley died?
It took quite a long time, and I think that was one of the reasons why I don't think it went like it was planned. I think it was planned for quite a fast thing, but maybe because it didn't really puncture deep enough, or that he was so strong and healthy, I don't know why. Maybe also, you know, he was smoking a lot of marijuana, which is very cancer stopping. So that can also have been part of why it took so long. But it took him from, I think this happened in 76 and he died 81. He died just a few months after John Lennon.
Okay.
But the thing was that he was approached by a doctor, I think his name was Ilsen or something like that, a German doctor. And it turned out this doctor, he later went to Europe and had treatment and so on. And according to Bob Marley's mother, if what I've been told is true, this doctor was absolutely horrendous against him, you know, and treated him so, so bad. And he went through all of these very painful procedures and so on. And when you track down this doctor, it turns out that he used to work, he was a Nazi doctor working in Auschwitz.
Oh, how awful. Okay.
And then you say, okay, how come one of these doctors with a Nazi background would like to save a Rastafari black guy? You know, yeah. It doesn't really make a lot of sense. But if you look at it in a different conspiratorial, you know, like conspiracy mindset, it could look like he was placed there to help take care of him.
Yeah, that would definitely be the case, I would imagine. Okay. So is there any other entertainer? Did you want to talk about Whitney Houston or any other entertainer?
I can say about Jimi Hendrix if you want.
Yeah, sure.
Jimi was, once again, he was a problem for the global elite because it was in the mid-60s where there were all these riots and uprisings going on. The black were standing up and there was all of these things going on. And Jimmy came from being more or less unknown to becoming the first black rock musician that really, really took off. You know, he became the symbol as well. And he started connecting with the Black Panther movement. Mm-hmm. And according to friends around him, he knew that he was targeted, that they were after him. He said to his friends that, I'm never going to return. Next time I go back to Seattle, I'm going to go in a pine box and I'm never going to become 28. And he knew that he was up again. Who took him out? I do not know. But I know that this thing about it being an overdose, absolutely not true. Because what he died of was that he died of drowning. He was drowned in red wine. When he came to the hospital and they were trying to resurrect him, the red wine was coming out of his mouth and nose and all of that. As soon as they touched him, there was red wine coming out everywhere. But there was very, very low alcohol percentage in his blood, meaning that it was not from drinking, that he was dead before it could even spread in the body.
Yeah, I hear you.
And then, it's said that his manager, Mike Jeffries, was involved in this thing. Mike Jeffries later died in a mid-air collision over France, plane collision. There's all these violent deaths around these events.
Well, do you know... do you know anything? Two other entertainers, Amy Winehouse. Do you know anything about her death?
I just know that there's a lot of strange things around that. Once again,
yes.
You know, it was the Club of 27. She was 27 as well. There's so many of them that died when they were 27. And neighbors heard very strange noises and sounds and screams from her house. When this happened, she had also been standing up against the elite, the global elite, the Illuminati, in different ways and been used by them. I don't know enough to say anything for certain.
Okay, and what about Jim Hammond?
I would say for sure that there was a lot of strange things going on there.
What about Jim Morrison?
Jim Morrison, once again, this is one I'm not sure because... When you look in, his father was a military man and there were things going on there, but I don't know enough to say it out loud.
Okay. All right. Is there, because we have been going for a while, and so I don't want to keep you too much longer, and I'm going to be looking in the chat to see if there are any questions. So anyone who's listening live here, we do have a chat room going on here along the side. Please do put your questions if you have any for Ole in all caps. But in the meantime, is there any other deaths or assassinations that you want to discuss or bring forward to make people aware of?
I think Whitney Houston is one of them. Okay. Which is very, very tragic and awful the way that she went. You know the official story that she was age 48. She was at the pre-Grammy. She was going to go to the pre-Grammy big party. His promoter Clive Davis was having 800 guests in the ballroom of the Beverly Hilton Hotel, and she was there a couple of days before. What happened was that the official story was that she took in to this room 434 in this hotel, Beverly Hilton Hotel on Wilshire Boulevard in Los Angeles. And like I say, the official story is that she came to her room about 2:30 and she wanted to take a bath. So she took a bath, and then an hour later, she was found dead in her bathtub. But her body was already cold by that. When they dragged her out of the bathtub, her body was already cold. How that is possible in just 1 hour, and especially if you take a bath in a hot bath, that is absolutely not possible. She was found with her head below water and her feet sticking out of the bathtub like this. So you sort of, when you start looking at this, okay, that was how she died. That is what they say, that she died from having taken medication and maybe fallen asleep or something and then drowned in the bathtub. But then when you start looking on the circumstances around it, they left her in the hotel room dead until around midnight when this party stopped. So while she died in the afternoon, the coroner and the management of the hotel was specifically asked to leave her body there until the party was over. I mean, we're talking like 8-9 hours while there's 800 people. The whole music business is just downstairs.
Incredible.
A big party.
Yeah.
And when you look at these things, you were talking about these strange rituals again.
Yes.
This one has a lot of strange things around them.
Yes.
Since she was found cold, I mean, normal logic would say that she died earlier on. And the night before, or if I go the day before, her daughter, 18-year-old daughter, Bobby Christina, she had almost died in an identical situation. She was found in the bath, in the same. I mean, she had rented a whole a whole floor or
a
whole
suite.
Yeah, yeah, big massive one. And Bobby Christina was taking a bath the day before, and her friends was trying to call her, but she didn't open the door. So in the end, they more or less got the door, broke up the door, went in there, and she was like totally gone. But they got her out of the bath, and nothing happened. Then the identical thing happens the next day to her mother, but this time she dies. But in the meantime, around 2:30 in the morning, 2:30 a.m., the person who was staying underneath the suite, he woke up because there was his bathroom was being flooded from above. There was this enormous, not enormous, but there was this big water leak coming through.
Wow.
through the ceiling. So he called the security, and they went upstairs to try and find out what was going on. And the security guy told this guy that this is Whitney Houston's suite. They went in there. There was nobody there. But what he noticed was that there was a flat screen TV that was smashed in there. And also he heard there was some disturbance up there. Anyway, so the question is, it seems like maybe a drink had been laced, something like that, because probably Christina, almost this, you know, she was almost unconscious. So it seems like maybe champagne or something, a drink or something was laced, and then they were put in a bathtub or whatever. I'm not sure what happened, but when you see these things, especially how the elite have and the Illuminati have invaded the music industry. I mean, they've invaded the film industry, they invaded the music industry, everywhere where they can really affect people on a big scale, they're there. And it's so awful when you see that these people like Michael Jackson, like Whitney or Chaka Khan or whoever, Amy Winehouse and so on, they're worth more dead than alive. You know, when they come to that age, it's just like Whitney's voice was not the same anymore. And she was, life was sort of spiraling downwards. And so by killing or letting her die, suddenly her whole thing, it just came to this massive comeback, you know. And you could see within 30 minutes from after she was found dead, iTunes and Sony had raised doubled the price on all her albums. And also, when you look at it, she died on February 12th, which is only 2 days before Valentine's Day, you know. And all of her songs was, or the famous ones were love songs, you know, perfect for Valentine's. So the sales over Valentine's that year was just like astronomic. They had just prepared a remake of The Bodyguard with a new star that they said this. They presented it the evening before her death. This woman, I can't remember, Jennifer, what's her name? Jennifer Hudson. Clive Davis introduced her as the new Whitney and so on. So there was all this building up beforehand. Also, when it comes to this ritual thing, you know, sometimes when they hit people, they do it in a place where, if you look on Google Maps, sometimes you can see pyramid shapes. You know, the streets are exactly, or it's an old sacrifice place, or it's an old killing place, or it's an old some. Quite often, there's some kind of ritualistic part of the killing. I don't understand it myself, but I can just see that it repeats itself. And if you go on Google Map and you look at Beverly Hilton Hotel, you will see that on the roof, one of the things on this big hotel is that there's these big sun symbols on the roof. You can't see them from the street level, right, but on top of them. But also, one of the buildings are built almost like an arrow. And if you look where this arrow is pointing, it goes to the Century Plaza Towers, which are pyramid-shaped. And in the garden between these two pyramid-shaped towers, in the garden there's a perfect pyramid with the all-seeing eye, all of these things. You can go in on Google Maps, it's quite interesting to watch. And outside it, there's this fountain, which is the all-seeing eye as well, right in the middle of the street.
Yes, and absolutely.
It's just say that it's a repeating pattern.
Yes. Well, are you aware of the role of Satanism in the deaths of the musicians?
No, I...
Okay.
No.
Have you ever read Peter Lavenda's books?
No.
Okay, I'd highly recommend them because with your background, his investigations into the symbolism and into these ritualistic deaths and the use of mind control in the deaths, and the use of mind control in assassinations, et cetera, et cetera. Lavenda is one of the most astute researchers. He lives back east and in North, I think it's New York or Long Island. He's written several books. I'm forgetting the name of it at the moment. I read one of his books. It's brilliant investigative journalism, and he did investigate the links between Tavistock Institute, and Rand Institute, the Manson killings, all of that. So there's a huge role that Satanism plays in the lives of musicians and what appears to be a takeover, and they symbolize it. In fact, the symbols you're talking about in terms of being in the vicinity, the chosen place where Whitney Houston died, et cetera, a lot of stars right now are actually using hand signals in their videos. This is all over the internet. It's very obvious stuff. A lot of them are using also the, I think it was it the Grammys, even Katy Perry, I think it was, who did extremely satanistic sort of opening song there. So they're using, a lot of these musicians are using this kind of symbolism in their work. In other words, they're trying to signal that they've become sort of taken over by this satanic order, and this is all part of it as well. So this is really an important part of not just assassinations of entertainers, musicians being very central in this way, but I would imagine their world leaders, people that are taken out in this way. So I don't know if you've traced, sounds like you have not traced the role of Satanism in all of these various murders across the board, and the symbolism that starts being, and that, of course, everyone knows the Illuminati hand signals that they do, and so on and so forth. So I just wanted to bring that up and ask you, if you ever do go down that road and start investigating. It's not a very happy area, obviously, to go down. None of this stuff is, but, writing a book that involves all of this is, I do think that Peter Lavenda's work would be of special interest because of this. I've got now, go right ahead, you can reply to that.
No, I just want to say I've stayed away from some areas because the areas I've been focusing on are so controversial anyway. So I've stayed away from aliens, I've stayed away from reptiles, I've stayed away from Satanism, I've stayed away from, because if I start mentioning these things, many people just block. So I purposely stayed away from that and left it to people who are more focused on these areas, because they're so big, these areas, and so we need to do our own little part. And my part has been more on the street level, finding out who carried out the different these different events or operations, and then I've left the rest for other people who are more like this Peter, who are more into it.
Okay.
I can only say as well that this thing with the all-seeing eye and the symbolism, so on my website I have half my face. It's just because I really like the graphic of the graphic design. I always wanted to do that. When I did my website, I just thought, finally I can do one of these things. And then people have started seeing that, oh my God, he's one of them. I just say, please, if you think that, let my words and actions speak for themselves, and then it's up to you to judge.
Right. At Project Camelot, we use the same thing. We took the side of the cheetah, and we used the one eye. And our this was actually our signal back to the Illuminati to say that we recognize that you use the all-seeing eye, but we basically are trying to say, if you're watching us, we're watching you.
There you go.
So I feel
I'm not going to let them control it. If I like that, I'm going to go for it.
Right.
I didn't even think of it until somebody, and also people have said, oh, they've seen me sit like this, and that's some kind of symbol. I mean, come on. I'm sitting on a chair. Is that a symbol as well?
I have two ears.
What does that mean?
People like to do that. Okay, but those are smear campaigns. So let me, because we're going for quite a while here, let me ask you these questions that are coming up in the chat, if you don't mind.
No.
Okay. So One person is saying, do you have any insight regarding the Arizona, they're calling her the lady politician shot on stage? I'm trying to remember her name. Is it
the
Karen?
Answer is no.
But maybe because you're European, this doesn't mean a lot to you. She was.
I haven't even heard of it.
Yeah. Okay. Mike Harris actually knows quite a bit about that. So whoever wrote the question, you can certainly listen to his show. And I've had him talk about the Arizona shootings a number of times. But that was definitely a targeted hit. Let's see. Do you have any idea about future false flags?
I think they're getting very, very scared. I think they're getting very sloppy. I think they're getting, because so many are waking up now. This group is, they're only like a few thousand. We're billions. There's a reason for them to get nervous. Because, as soon as we start taking our power back and say, listen, guys, we're not afraid anymore. It doesn't matter if you have high tech or loads of uniforms or whatever. We're not taking it. We want to have a beautiful life and really joyous and have a party together. It's enough, you know. I think they're getting very afraid of this awakening that is going on, where people also are raising their energy so that they're not so easily controlled, that they get more spiritual awakened and so on.
Yes.
So I think I've heard that George Bush Sr. is crying when he goes to sleep and so on. I can understand him. I would also, if I had his karma, I would not be a happy sailor or whatever you call it. And I think that they're really getting desperate. This is the thing also now with these, with the scientists. I don't know how many scientists they killed, now bankers, now, you know, the Dutch queen said, I'm out of here. You know, the Pope said, shit, this is getting too close. I'm out of here. You know, it's, I think it's falling apart. I can only say I'm super optimistic about the future and happy days. But we have to stand strong. We have to be brave. We have to stand in truth, help each other, you know, and also let forgiveness and not revenge lead the way. It's when you look at history and you look at the different revolutions and so on, listen to the word revolution. Revolution meaning repeating what was there before. And very often when you see revolutions, you will see that the people who do the revolution sometimes, if not always, becomes even worse than the people that were there before. So violence is not the way to go in my world. But we have to be courageous. We have to help each other and take a stand, dare to stand up for what is right. And especially people in uniform, I say, please, from the bottom of my heart, inform yourself about whose agenda you're serving. It is you who have to live with what you're doing. You have to live with the karma that you have created. You are the ones who have done it, even though you've been giving orders from somebody else. You have to take back your own responsibility, just like all of us have to do, but especially people in uniform and soldiers and so on. So I can only ask, please inform yourself before you do anything stupid to yourself and other.
Okay. All right, well, we're going to close down here because I don't see any more obvious questions here in the chat, and we've been going for quite some time. I want to thank you so much, Ole. Do you want to give your website and talk about, you know, how you actually, you know, we are doing this free here, but both Camelot and Ole could definitely use some donations at this time in order to keep afloat, so to speak. Do you want to talk about your own situation?
I can say I would. I'm so, so grateful for any type of donations. Also, a way to support me is by subscribing to my newsletter, where I try to keep cutting edge information, really information that you will not find anywhere else. And also, I'm really, really looking to make a high quality, top quality documentaries about how all of these things are connected. So I'm really trying to get in touch with people like John Pilger, Australian filmmaker, or Nigel Turner, the English producer, or other people like that. Mm-hmm. Also, I would very much like to get in touch with Clint Eastwood if by any chance he's listening. That would be extremely helpful because I've got some very important projects. And like I say, my website is lightonconspiracies.com. lightonconspiracies.com, and my book is called Coup d'etat in slow motion. That is Coup d'etat in slow motion. And I can just say it's wonderful to be here. It's a great time to be alive. It's very challenging, but like the native Indian says, we, the souls that have come here at this time, we are the strongest of the strong. We are the strongest of the strong. This is not a time to wimp out. It is not a time to focus on your own petty problems, even when they may look very serious. The way out of your own problems, the way out of your own head, is to reach out and help other people. By helping other people, you lift yourself. Then you lift them. People who see your acts of kindness lifts as well. This is the way to gain your strength back. Focus away from yourself and lift the whole situation. And I would very much like to just finish with a little prayer. I'm not a religious person. I'm a very spiritual person, not religious. And I have a beautiful yoga teacher that she has this prayer that I love, and it says, "May the entire universe be filled with peace and joy, love and light. May everyone, and especially the ones who hurt us, be filled with peace and joy, love and light. Victory to that light." I know this is confusing for some people, but this is the way to go. This is the way to open up and embrace the people who dare to leave this crazy mindset that they're in. They are in a difficult situation at the moment. They have so much on their conscience. I think the elite are shit scared that we will chop them up and serve them as pasta bolognese because of what they've committed, you know. But the way out is that the sooner they take a step out of this absolute madness that they're creating and come towards us, we will embrace them. The longer they wait, the colder the embrace. This is the time to step forward. Be brave and leave them and stand in truth. Take responsibility for what you've done. Let's go forward in transparency, because this has to be exposed so that the body can heal itself, so that the world can heal itself. Awful things have been done, but we need to move forward. And the way forward is bravery and forgiveness, compassion. This is the way in my world.
All right. Thank you very much, Ole Damagar. And thank you for appearing here. We will have you back. We will get in touch with, perhaps we'll be able to get in touch with Chip Tatum and see what we can do about organizing a discussion. And thank you for your wonderful research. I'd highly recommend his book, Coup d'etat in Slow Motion, a masterful work, I have to say. And you make it available for free as a PDF, isn't that right?
No, yeah, but it came to a point where I was advised to not do it anymore, because for people to appreciate 30 years of research, it is not the way. And also, I'm not a strong person when it comes financially. I really need support here, because it is very hard to have a family and do all of these things at the same time.
I bet.
To feed them. So, like I say, it's not free anymore. There were thousands of people that were given it for free. Now it's not free anymore.
Okay. All right. Well, I still highly recommend it, and I encourage everyone to support you. So thank you, and we'll do this again, okay?
My absolute pleasure.
All right. Bye-bye, everyone. Have a great day.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. You too.